This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined again by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we've got two sponsors for the show. Those are Jam Software and Shobi, and I'll tell you more about both of those as the show goes on. Bradley, good evening.
How's it going?
It's going not too bad. How are you?
Beautiful day. Going to a great concert tonight. It's a band called Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So they're out of Nashville, but they're coming here to Chattanooga. It's a great kind of singer-songwriter type band if you're into that. So yeah, it's the beauty of, like, because you don't have Apple Music, but I think they're on Amazon Prime streaming music. So you should check them out. I don't know if it's your style of music, but yeah, Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors. So we live here. I'm going to that in a few hours. So
sounds pretty good. Well, we'll not keep you too long then.
Well, it's not till later tonight, so that would have to be a long podcast. I had this idea one time that I thought would be fun. Would be, you ever seen like those telethons where people do like, I want to host this show for 24 hours, or I want to be on the radio for 24 hours and raise money for something. Wouldn't it be fun to do a podcast for like 24 hours? I mean, like no one would download it, but like to be live on the air, you know, you could have your friends stop by and talk about stuff. I don't know. That'd be neat, like a fundraiser of some sorts.
Well, that sounds like the kind of thing that like the Relay Network could do, you know, when you've got hosts all around the world and could sort of like beats one for podcasting.
Always on. I like Beats One. I do like Beats One. You canceled Apple Music, right?
I did. I still have it right now. I forgot to cancel it for the first month, but yeah. I mean, I could buy every piece of music I wanted for less than it cost me to have a year of Apple Music.
What I love about it is because it's funny, I have bought more music like post signing up for Apple Music, as crazy as that sounds, but I've also gone to way more concerts since I signed up for it than I ever had before. I've gone to a handful of concerts. I love it when I'm like out somewhere talking with a friend that say, hey, check out this band. And I can now just like, without having to buy it, can just listen to it. So,
yeah.
I do like it. Feels like the streaming stuff is like the way of the future, I guess. The family plan is a good deal for people with kids as well.
I mean, I think I would probably go back to it if the girls eventually wanted a streaming music service, I'd probably say, right, family plan on Apple Music is the way to go. But I think I'm maybe just too old to like new things. I don't know.
You know, speaking of like streaming music services, I did sign up for YouTube Red for the free trial. Like, you know, it's what it is you could get YouTube ad free and then you get background audio on iOS, which is really neat. There have been plenty of times like I listen to lectures and stuff that are on YouTube that I would love to just close that out. And I got me thinking, like, I would love the ability to pay Google to like whitelist our IP address for YouTube ads. I think that could be something that I don't know. It seems like that's something they could sell to schools, and it's fairly easy to like, you know, determine where people are coming from. A lot of our vendors do that. Like, we want stuff limited to only work on campus, like things that need to be monitored by a teacher, like you know, little reading exams and whatnot through Advanced Reader.
Yeah,
that you have to be on our IP address to work, and so it seems like they could implement that fairly easily. But I'm sure that's low on the priority list.
I think actually YouTube Red is a pretty attractive option because you also get Google Play Music with that. So you've got the I used that for 3 months because when I bought my Chromebook, my last Chromebook, it came with an offer for a 3 month free trial of Google Music, and I used that, and they have an iOS app and it's really nice. And I think what I liked about it was it was just a bunch of albums and you could play the albums that were there, and that was sort of simple enough, and there was none of this curation nonsense available. It's just here's an album, let's play it and you're done. So I would actually, if I was going to pay, I would probably also take a hard look at Google Play and in the form of YouTube Red, but it's not available in the UK. YouTube Red is only in the US, but that doesn't mean I haven't seen the adverts for it everywhere. You think you could figure that out as well, but I guess they're priming the pump for when it does come.
Yeah, you're officially old when you stop wanting to learn new music, I think. It's driving my wife nuts because I'll constantly be like, hey, I found this new band. And she's like, I just want to listen to the bands I already know.
The thing for me is that whenever I hear something new, I want to listen to everything they've ever done. And it just becomes a sort of chased in a rabbit hole to find all the things that these bands have
done. That's why Apple Music is great. You just like add it all to your library.
I guess, you know, you just have to get the whole library right there.
Add all the things. But YouTube Red's interesting. It's interesting from the perspective for content distributors as well, like how this affects their ad revenue. I don't know. That'll be something to watch. But it's one of the first times we've seen Google like offer that option to just like pay and bypass the ads. Typically, your eyeballs are worth more than your dollars.
True that. Yeah.
But I mean, that would like I found this. I think it's called PureView is the website I found, where basically like you paste a YouTube URL into the PureView, mm-hmm. and it will basically pull out the embed. Mm-hmm. And what that does is keeps, like, if you're showing something to your class, it keeps, like, the sidebar from showing up, anything else that they say, hey, we want to watch that, we want to watch that, or any of the comments. It's just, like, a straight-up pure video.
Yeah.
And so I'll put a link to that in the show notes. It's a pretty good resource for teachers. The only thing I don't like about it is, like, you can't link, like, you can't bookmark the PureView URL. So, like, you basically have to bookmark the YouTube URL and then drop it into PureView every time you want to use it. Or I guess you could just use something like KeepVid and download it.
Yeah, I guess that's another way to go. The other thing that I've done in school for that, Bradley, is use the Chromecast. So, you know, you look at it on your phone and you see the whole, you know, YouTube interface, and then you just cast the video you want to watch to the Chromecast, and that just comes up and plays. I think you might see related videos at the end of that. I'm not certain, but in general, you don't see the entire YouTube interface. You just see the video that you've cast over to it.
One of the things we were working on in class this past week was, or the past few weeks, is a topic on digital citizenship. And so I kind of paired the kids up into groups, and I told them to get into groups that none of them had basically been with before. Like, hey, don't just be in a group with your friends. And on purpose, I gave them very, very little direction. We talked about it from a theory perspective and practicality, like what does staying safe online mean? Like, why does this matter? And really just wanted to see what they would come up with. And, you know, they all came up with like kind of drastically different things. Some people focus on the aspect of you staying safe online. Other people focus on the fact of like why you shouldn't basically cyberbully people you shouldn't basically be mean online to people. One of the things people came up with and they found an image for was don't be mean behind the screen. And it's pretty, you know, it's kind of like this is my first full quarter of teaching, or first full semester of teaching, and it was like pretty rewarding to see the kids kind of come up with different things and all make great points. Of course, bonus points for one of the groups, they had a Stephen Colbert animated GIF or GIF. Do you say GIF or do you say GIF?
GIF, come on.
GIF. All right, sorry. Animated GIF. And things I didn't know was Google Slides supported that and played it in line and repeated it over and over. And so that was it's just kind of a fun thing when your students really do something well in ways you didn't expect.
And that's a compelling use case for Google Slides, I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, it supports that. I don't think it like, you know, one of the things that like really is, to me, especially on the desktop, makes Google Slides so easy is the built-in YouTube search and the built-in Google Images search.
Oh my goodness.
Like you don't have to, you don't have to find images, download them. Like, and if you're using Keynote, download them to the downloads directory, find them, drop it on there, resize it. It just works like it's built in. I mean, that was fantastic.
Yeah, that is a really cool feature, no doubt about it. I think Keynote plays GIFs, but it kind of blows my mind that the Photos app still doesn't support GIFs. You know, so you can have GIFs in your photo library and pull them out and use them, but you can't tell which ones are GIFs because, well, apart from the fact that they probably have some subtitle on them at some point from a TV show or whatever, but you know, there's no way to play a GIF inside the Photos app on iOS, which is kind of weird.
Well, Apple has their own standard, Live Photos.
Yeah, that's the new GIF, isn't it? It only works in like two places.
Yeah, I've got one of those apps that can convert it by a Live Photo to a GIF for sharing elsewhere. But anyway, so before we move on to our topic tonight, let's thank our first sponsor, the fine folks at Shobi. You guys know Shobi. They're an iPad app for paperless classrooms and paperless teachers. With Shobi, teachers can assign, collect, and review their students' work on their iPads, and they can provide feedback directly on the documents through annotation features such as the pen tool, text, and voice notes. Students can show their learning creatively by submitting to Shobi from thousands of iPad apps or by using the tools built into Shobi. Shobi has some new features this school year. That's a gradebook feature. For Shobi Pro, which allows teachers to easily add, review, and export student grades. More great features like student portfolios and parent access will be coming to Shobi Pro later this fall. Shobi Basic is free for starting out, so if you're a teacher or an administrator and you want to test this out in a classroom, you just go to the App Store and download Shobi, Shobie. And when you love it, sign up for Shelby Pro, pay for it for a year, and you save 30% off the annual purchase price. So start your paperless classroom today by downloading Shelby from Shelby.com or in the App Store.
Good stuff. Good stuff. So, Bradley, there is only one topic in the news this week.
iPad Pro. And I do not have one, mm-hmm. but I have read all of the reviews. And so that makes me an expert on all things iPad Pro.
What more do you need to know?
Yeah. I mean, would that not sum up the internet? Like, I've read the reviews, so it makes me an expert.
No. The only way to be authoritative on a topic is to actually not have read the reviews. I didn't read the link, but... it seems to me that blah 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 blah. So
too boring, didn't click, or too long, didn't click.
Yeah.
No. So I you had these written down in the show notes, and I thought mm-hmm. it was perfect because I think that there's a big discussion among really the Apple community right now mm-hmm. is like the iPad Pro a laptop replacement, or mm-hmm. is it just a big iPad? And I'm going to say yes.
It's to just both of a those. Big iPad. That's so good.
I mean, you know, yes. Yeah, it's just a big iPad. You know, yeah. It's yes to both of those. And so you mentioned in our notes that the Daring Fireball review from John Gruber mm-hmm. and then Federico Vittici's review at Mac Stories. And they could not be more different mm-hmm. from from people with two drastically different workflows and really from two different eras of the Apple ecosystem.
Yeah, yet doing basically the same job.
Doing the same job.
You know, they're both writers, they're both on the internet, yet, you know, John's coming at it from, you know, a very old school Mac perspective, and Federico's coming at it from a very iOS-centric perspective. And I think it's fascinating to read those two articles side by side and just see how different the mentality is.
Yeah, and both of them are great. And mm-hmm. I thought John, you know, he finishes it up with, is it the computer for me? Like, is it a replacement computer for me? No. For you, maybe. For a lot of people, sure. And I think, you know, and John kind of sums it up with, like, you know, the future is not about x86 processors and devices with mouse pointers.
Yeah.
The future is about mobility. And I'm not, you know, when I don't think when he says that, like, he is predicting the death of the mouse. I think it's just from a large scale, like, how many computing devices are there in the world? The traditional laptop desktop style will become more of the minority over time, not because it's less useful, because it's, you know, the touch-based devices are that much more accessible to people.
Well, I mean, if we include smartphones in this conversation, Bradley, that actually happened 2 or 3 years ago. You know, you've got something like, you know, what is it, 200, 250 million iPhones being sold every year, a billion Android devices, number of iPads, you know. I mean, we're talking 40 million and we're dismissing that as nothing, you know, 40 million iPads, who cares, as opposed to the number of PCs that are sold. So, you know, mobile, touchscreen, cellular connections, smartphone-based devices are absolutely the number one computing modality for most people in the world now, in terms of consumer spending at least. And I think, you know, when you look at the way that, you know, John Gruber comes at this, he comes at it, he starts off talking about performance, and he's comparing the speed of the iPad Pro to the speed of, you know, various Macs that are available today or have been in the recent past. He talks about things like he talks about the hardware performance, he talks about the keyboard, whereas, you know, those of us who are coming at it from a more iOS-centric point of view are talking more about software. And what does it enable us to do with the software? And I think it's that shift in understanding. Like, because when you have a Mac, right, no matter whether you've got, you know, dual 30-inch monitors on a Mac Pro or an 11-inch MacBook Air, the software is just the same. And it essentially behaves the same, except in rare circumstances. It's the same software behaving the same way on all those machines. Whereas on mobile devices, the impact of the screen size on this behavior of the software and the usability of the software is massive, in a way that it simply isn't on the desktop. And I think for those of us who are coming at it more from the iOS side of the house, we're looking at this as a great new platform for software, rather than as a great new hardware, a great new platform for computing as such. It's really all about what does it let me do with software. And I think that's one of the things I would say is the sort of fundamental difference in the mindset between those two reviews. It was software versus hardware.
Yeah, and the iPad Pro, if you know, assuming it's successful, I'm sure that, I mean, I guess, how do you gauge success on something like that? But it'll be successful because of iOS, not because of the new speakers.
Yeah, exactly. And it will fail because of iOS, not because of its unwieldy size or it takes a little bit longer to charge or anything like that. You know, and I think that, I mean, I've got my iPad Pro sitting in front of me here, and it is phenomenal. I mean, from a technical point of view, if you want to talk about the hardware, every single part of it is just the best iOS device there has ever been in every respect. The screen size, the fit and finish is every bit as good as anything that Apple's shipped. The performance is astronomical. You know, nothing is slow in this machine at all. And, you know, it's an amazing piece of hardware. But then the iPad Air 2 was the same. You know, I mean, I've just finished packaging up my iPad Air 2 for sale, and not 1 minute of the time I owned that device did it ever feel slow. So it's not as if yet we've got the software that will challenge the hardware. I think there's a lot of headroom on this device for really new things to happen.
Yeah, and of course, Federico is an iOS power user to the 10th degree. Mm-hmm. And he does a lot of things that I would say are descriptive of his skill set. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily I would expect a kind of novice user to use, to do. I mean, the average person is probably not using Python scripts and tons of automation features. And that's okay.
Yeah,
because the iPad Pro is going to be whatever you need it to be. And I would say that there are certain, like in the classroom, there are certain skills, you know, classroom environments and certain types of classes that the iPad Pro would be more well suited for. Mm-hmm. And I think all this is doing, it's I don't think it's like saying that, okay, the iPad Pro is the only iPad they should sell now. Like there's still a case for the Mini. There's still a case for the Air, mm-hmm. and then now there's a case for the Pro. Like, you just have to look at what's the job you're hiring this to do.
Yeah, I think having watched some younger children use my iPad Pro, I would certainly say that its sheer physical size is something that would put a barrier in the classroom for some children to use it. I think you're certainly not going to be handing this thing over to 5, 6, and 7-year-olds. I mean, cost apart, right? Cost is a factor, no doubt, but let's say cost wasn't a factor. Let's say all iPads cost the same for some reason. The iPad Pro is straight up too big for 4, 5, 6-year-olds to really handle in a way that I think is meaningful. But even older kids, I think it's still quite big for most primary kids. And the other thing about it is that you know, many people have talked about tablets of this size as being almost like desktop computers. I think that, you know, one of the things I like about our iPad deployment is that the iPad doesn't dominate the school classroom. It doesn't dominate the desk, and it's not, you know, like when you have laptops in a school classroom, you have to basically have everybody clear their desks in order to get a laptop out because it just takes up so much space. And that's the thing I like about the iPad is that it doesn't do that. But I think to bring in the iPad Pro certainly would bring back an element of that again. And I think I'm terribly keen to do that.
Yeah, that's a great point. That it can be a part of the learning process and not be the only thing that you're using.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like how we back when there were 17-inch MacBook Pros, we weren't necessarily deploying that in schools.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think like everything that has a Pro in its name, I think today you have to know a reason why you want it. You know, the Mac Pro, you know, if you can articulate the reason why you want a Mac Pro, there's every reason you should get a Mac Pro. The same thing with, you know, at least the 15-inch MacBook Pro. You should probably have the ability to explain why you want to spend that kind of money on a machine. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm fine with people spending that money if they just want it. That's okay too. But, you know, if you're making a business case for anything with the Pro in the name, you have to sort of be able to see why it would be beneficial. And I think, you know, looking at the stylus support on the iPad Pro, the performance of it. You know, if you're, say, like a math teacher or an art teacher, there are eminent reasons why you would go iPad Pro in that situation, because you're the teacher who's going to do that kind of work and get the use out of those advanced features that come on the Pro device, whereas most people probably are not.
So, you know, we'll talk about your particular setup here in a bit. But like, mm-hmm. now that we have the devices, people are in hand, we're seeing some performance numbers come out of this. And yeah. the numbers that we've listed here in our notes are pretty incredible. It's almost crazy to think that Apple is making processors that go this fast.
Yeah, and that they lead in so many ways. I mean, we're talking straightforwardly about the fastest iOS device there has ever been, including the ones that were just released. So it handily beats the iPhone 6S in Geekbench scores. I've mostly looked at Geekbench, but there are other ones as well. I mean, the graphics benchmarks are in some ways actually more shocking than the CPU benchmarks. I think it was Gruber's review where he said, you know, you're getting iPad Air class CPU and you're getting MacBook Pro class GPU. I mean, the GPU numbers are off the charts. It's unbelievable. But even just in single core performance, you're looking at, you know, 3,200 Geekbench points in single core, whereas an iPad Air 2 was getting 1,800, right? So from 1,800 to 3,200 Geekbench points on single core. And at single core task, it's only fractionally slower than a 2015 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro with an Intel i5 processor, where you're talking 3,200 for the iPad Pro versus 3,295 for the Retina MacBook Pro in single core performance. And it feels that way. I mean, I can tell you that as well. It feels incredibly fast. Nothing takes long at all. Even when you're two up multitasking, Safari, you know, it feels like a desktop computer in the sense that, you know, you never see, you know, fractional rendering on the browser and things like that. You see the whole thing and it just zooms up. Safari is incredible on this device.
It has 4 gigs of RAM, correct?
4 gigs of RAM. I think I read as well that it's only 2 cores. The iPad Air 2 was 3 cores, but the 2 cores on the Air 2, the Pro, are actually going above 2 gigahertz. Whereas the cores on the 3 cores on the iPad Air 2 were below 1.8, I think. So that it's fewer cores but faster, and substantially faster.
Well, and how has the battery life been so far?
It's always hard to say the first day you get a new device. I mean, I got mine yesterday, so we're recording Thursday. I picked mine up on Wednesday after school from the Apple Store in Glasgow. And I mean, the first day you're demoing it like 10 times as much as you ever would in a normal day. So I came home and I plugged it in at about 5 o'clock. I was on 30% at that point, but I knew we were going to do the show, so I went to plug it in for a little bit. So, you know, it will eventually settle down to getting all day battery life, but it's, you know, there's work that iOS does when you set up a new device. It's re-indexing things. It's, you know, it's gathering new information about your behavior. And of course you're demoing the Pencil over and over again. So I've used it a lot more today than I would probably normally use my iPad, even though I use it all day at school now. And it's been, I think it'll be about the same as the iPad Air 2 at the end of the day. Yeah.
I wonder if you'll see any battery differentiation, but like if you're using the Pen for like 5-6 hours a day versus not.
That would be interesting. I suppose it's a possibility because you've got things like, you know, the screen is refreshing itself much faster, and double the refresh rate when you're using the Pencil. So you might see that. Yeah, I don't know if it'll be noticeable. It might just be a fractional difference. But
yeah, 20-30 minutes.
Yeah.
So before we move on, let's thank our final sponsor of the night, the fine folks at Jamf Software. They provide IT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technology such as Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in education organizations. They really want to talk about their great app for teachers called Casper Focus that works on a teacher's iPad to give them control of their classroom deployment. Casper Focus allows teachers to quickly gain students' attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select the specific Apple TV assigned to their class, choose and distribute iBooks, and even initiate AirPlay right from within Casper Focus. If you want to learn more about Jamf Software, the Casper Suite, and Casper Focus, you can do that at jampsoftware.com. That's jamfsoftware.com. So how does it, like, unboxing it, how does it feel? Like, what does it feel like in your hands?
It's quite a shock, to be honest with you. It is substantially different from any other iPad that has been. I mean, Horace Dedu described it as a whole new category, and I don't think he's far wrong in that respect. It's unlike any other iPad you've ever seen. although it is very much an iPad, everything about it is different, and it's... I don't want to sound crass here, but you know how when people have a stroke, they sort of neglect certain parts of their visual area or something like that? It feels a wee bit like that when you've got the iPad Pro, because it is so big and you don't hold it any further away. Then you're now in a situation where you cannot take in the whole screen with one glance. You have to actually move a little bit your head to look at either side of the screen. You know, not much, but a little bit. And certainly you have to move your eyes. And you have to reach for the corners of the screen, which you've never really had to do before. I mean, you think about holding an iPad Air 2 in your hands. You can basically shuffle your hands up and down the side to reach almost every part of the screen. There is no possibility of doing that with the iPad Pro. It's just so far away. So you really are genuinely reaching from your shoulder to touch certain parts of the screen, which is an interesting experience. I haven't found it fatiguing so far. The one thing I have found fatiguing, though, is holding it in my hand while teaching. So I had it in class today, and you know, I don't teach a lot in a sort of PowerPoint mode, so I'm not standing there running presentations from my iPad all day. But I do certainly, you know, carry it, walk around the classroom, show people things on the iPad and so on. And I find myself putting it down more than I would have bothered to with the iPad Air 2. The Air 2 is incredibly light, you know, and it's kind of like maybe the high point in one-handed operation of the iPad. But the thing about the iPad Pro, and this is, we mentioned this in my sort of, you know, first look show that we did, is that when you hold it on one edge, the other edge makes such a long lever that it can be quite tiring on your hand. So I find myself doing that thing where you sort of cradle it in your hand, cradle it on your forearm, if you like. But I think there's great opportunity for cases to make this a lot easier. There are kinds of cases where it's like, you know, a thing like on flip-flops that goes between your toes. It's kind of like that, but for your finger on the back of the iPad. Cases like that, cases with a hand strap around the back, things like that, I think will all help very much with handling the iPad Pro.
I know at my desk, I have a Jarvis standing desk, and it actually has mounts for... it has a kind of a tray for my laptop, but it actually has a mount for my external monitor that I take it off its stand and it screws into the back. And like, I'm wondering if there's a future for something like that for a standing desk where you could actually just kind of mount your iPad Pro in there, and it's kind of at eye level, and then you have your keyboard and you know, obviously it had to be a Bluetooth keyboard and not the smart keyboard, but have a keyboard down there that you basically work off of.
Yeah, I can see a lot of opportunity. You know, I've said before this before about the Surface as well, that the Surface, and I suppose the iPad Pro 2, they're kind of like tablets or desktops, but not so much laptops. You know, they're either on a desk or they're being moved about in your hand. And I can see, you know, the smart connector on the iPad gives a great opportunity for somebody to make a docking station for the desk where you've got a keyboard built in, you've maybe got power available, and, you know, it's all just there, and if you want to go, you just, you know, rip your iPad off and go. And I think that actually has potential benefits over the Bluetooth keyboard, because the thing about the Bluetooth keyboard is it stays connected to your iPad even if you walk away. So you get into this weird situation sometimes where the keyboard won't come up on your iPad because it thinks it's got a Bluetooth keyboard attached, but the Bluetooth keyboard is somewhere else. And the only way to get your keyboard up without going back to your Bluetooth keyboard is to turn off Bluetooth on your iPad. Which then disables your pencil and things like that. So,
I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So it's, I think there's an opportunity to use, for people to use a smart connector to make much nicer desk things for the iPad Pro. And I certainly hope to see some things like that.
Talk about, you know, we talked about hardware. Well, last thing is speaker. How is that? Is that all it's cracked up to be? I mean, have you listened to much music or any podcast on it?
Not hugely. I watched a little bit of some movies. I watched the Transformers movie, which is incredibly noisy and loud and has all kinds of different sounds going on at the same time. And I found it, the loudness claim is true. It was an incredibly loud device. And I could imagine quite easily, you know, sitting five or six kids around this iPad on the table and having them watch something right on that instead of putting on a projector or whatever. And at one point today, I actually kind of wished that I could route the sound back out the iPad while projecting the display to the Apple TV, because the speaker on the iPad Pro is actually better than the speaker that's built into the projector in my classroom. So it's nice. It sounds great to me. I'm not a big one for using the speakers on my iPad very much. I tend to either use headphones or something like an Apple TV in the classroom or whatever, but it is noticeably better than any other iPad.
Let's talk about apps. You know, some apps have been updated, some are not. Mm-hmm. What's the situation there with your toolkit?
So it's a mixture. I mean, the big offender, as always, is Google Apps, which haven't been updated yet, although I'm sure they will be. The Chrome has been updated, as far as I know, for the iPad Pro. I might be wrong on that. I don't use Chrome, but certainly, you know, I'm looking at Google Docs right now, and it has not been updated. So basically, what I want you to do is imagine what it's like to use a non-updated, an iPhone 5 app on an iPhone 6 Plus. It's like that, except, you know, 100 times more ridiculous because of the sheer size of it. So the big thing I think about the iPad Pro software is that it has a new keyboard layout. I think this is really important. It's a much better keyboard layout, I think. It's taken me some time to adjust to it. But if your app hasn't been updated for the iPad Pro, it gets the old keyboard scaled up to this enormous size. And it's like Fisher-Price keyboard. It's ridiculously large. And it's borderline unusable, actually. So I think developers are going to have to get their apps updated for iPad Pro sooner rather than later, because even just, you know, trying to type on something that big, you know, you're moving your hands a bit all over the place to try and reach keys. It's just silly. So it's kind of weird. But to be honest, there aren't that many apps that I've got, at least in my iPad, that haven't been updated. You know, I'm looking at things like Dropbox hasn't been updated. The three Google apps haven't been updated. Most of the rest of them, Transmit and Prompt by Panic. Transmit has been updated. Prompt has not. Prompt is my SSH client, which I hope to see updated, because it would be a great thing to have many, many lines of SSH content on Big iPad Pro screen. Slack has been updated. Google Drive has not been updated either. So basically the whole Google Suite needs an update. All the Omni apps have been updated. The Apple apps have been updated, and the built-in ones and the downloadable ones as well. So it's a mixed bag. Some apps look worse than others not updated. Like the Dropbox app is just insanely ridiculous. But Explain Everything also hasn't been updated, but it doesn't look quite so bad. It has quite a minimal user interface anyway.
Yeah, the Google ones, you know, we have a love-hate relationship with Google Docs and spreadsheets and slides on iOS anyways. I feel like they could use I don't know what they need, but like I think you and the best, so that's part of the reason that we're so interested in Chromebooks, is because the Google Drive experience is so much better in the full browser.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting conversation to just see, you know, at what point do you say, well, you know, these guys aren't really doing a great iOS job. They're doing an okay iOS job, but they're not really, they don't seem as committed to it as other platforms, including Microsoft for that matter. So we'll see.
Okay, so we talked about some of the apps. We talked about the keyboard.
Yeah, I want to say a little bit more about the new software keyboard. Obviously, a lot of focus has been on the hardware keyboard, you know, because Apple's doing the case and so on. But the software keyboard has got a new layout on the iPad Pro as well. And it's basically identical to an Apple US keyboard layout. So if you have a US layout Bluetooth keyboard, it's basically the same as that. It's a little bit shorter. I put my keyboard up to the iPad just to check it out, and it's maybe 5 or 6 millimeters shorter when you get to the top row than the physical keyboard is. So it's a little bit squashed down, but not much. But what it means is you've got a number and symbols row right out on the front keyboard. You've got things like square brackets and curly brackets and backslash and the pipe and the backtick and different things. The forward slash and question mark key and so on. And actually, to be honest with you, this is a substantial improvement. You know, I'm a really good iPad typer. I'm better than almost anybody else I know at typing on the iPad. I can basically touch type on the iPad screen from muscle memory. And all of that has gone out the window with the iPad Pro, because everything's in a different place. So I'm going to have to reestablish that. And I'm really struggling with it at the moment. But, you know, 24 hours is not really enough time to do that. But the big thing that I've noticed is having the numbers right on the keyboard is a massive benefit. I hadn't realized just how often you're flipping into the second keyboard on iPad to get the numbers, but having them out on the front keyboard is fantastic.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Because you do have to, you know, and that's just an extra, it's two taps. It's tap to that keyboard and a tap back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've got things like, you know, you've got the plus and minus keys and the equal sign and things. They're all out on the front keyboard as well. So there's actually only two screens of keyboard on the iPad Pro instead of three on the normal iPad. Just because there's so many symbols available on the front. And on the second keyboard, it actually does duplicate some of the things that are already available on the first keyboard. So you can do a lot with that. So I'm really impressed with that. I think it's going to take some time for me to get used to, but I think it's a really nice improvement over the old iPad keyboard, as familiar and fast with it as I was.
Well, I think there's going to be subsets of people that use a hardware keyboard. Mm-hmm. But I would dare say that the vast majority of iPads are not being paired with keyboards daily. And I suspect that will remain true in the future.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with so much writing about iPads is it's done by writers. You know, and they're always focused on the writing experience on an iPad because that's what they do. And I genuinely think that most people don't actually type that much day to day. Some people obviously type. You know, there's a power law distribution there. You know, some people type most of the words in the world as written by a few people. And then, you know, the long tail of people who don't type that much. So I'm not sure that, you know, typing's always been the thing that people talk about on iPad, but I'm not sure it deserves to dominate the conversation in the way that it does.
That's a great point. Because, like, I in my day job, like, I write some, mm-hmm. but a lot of it's, like, very short response to emails. Hey, I'll check that out, or I'll look into that, or sounds good.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of reading, and it's research. And, yeah, that's a great point. I mean, and you think about, you know, I don't know, let's say someone, you basically review content all day. You're marking up PDFs all day. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't care about the typing, but the pen, which we'll get to, well, that's a game changer.
Oh, yeah. For you. Yeah. The pen is huge. It's a really big deal.
Well, let's talk about the pen, mm-hmm. Or I guess the pencil.
Pencil.
Is it the pen? Is it
Apple pencil.
So it's white. No other colors.
No other colors.
You know that'll be next year. You'll get the colors, and you'll be stuck with the white one, and you'll want the pink one.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
Does it roll at all?
It does. It's circular in section, but it is. I've got it here. I'm just going to roll it on my desk. Can you hear that? I'll try that again. That's it, stopped. It has an internal weight to it. So it's actually heavier on, like if you're holding it vertically, it's heavier on the right side than the left side. So it will actually find a position. If your desk's not too steep, it will sort of roll to a stop after a couple of turns, which is quite interesting.
It's $99, correct?
£79 in the UK. Which is a ripoff, but then everything in Britain's a ripoff.
Well, what do you think is a fair price for it?
Well, you know, I'm thinking about that, and I'm thinking about other Bluetooth styli that I have purchased in my time, and I have paid, you know, £45 to £55 for that kind of thing, and I could have paid more if I wanted to, I just didn't want to. But for compared to those things, say like the Evernote stylus, which is not that good and very expensive, this is well worth the additional money. You know, if you're already in the ballpark of I want to buy a Bluetooth stylus, this one is better made, much less fiddly because it's got its internal battery and you charge it with the lightning plug on the end. And the difference in operation from any other stylus that has ever been made to this pencil, at least for iOS, is so much better that it would be worth it at twice the price.
Well, you know, you and I talked about that years ago. We were talking about, like, you know, PDF Pen and mm-hmm. how it supported various stylus APIs. And then we said, like, this needs to be something that's done from the system level.
Yeah.
And this is really precisely what they've done.
Yeah. And we always said also that the iPad needs to have a better digitizer as well to support that. And this is exactly what the iPad Pro is better screen hardware plus plus changes in the operating system and an Apple design stylus. And the thing about the iPad, the Apple Pencil that is a game changer is that the tip is absolutely rigid. It doesn't deflect in any way when you write on the screen. So it's a very interesting piece of technology because it's also clearly not totally capacitive because it does not work on any other touchscreen. So if you some of these other styli, you can use them on another touchscreen, but they only get the precision if the app you're using supports their API. Whereas, you know, I can, if I touch the Apple Pencil onto my Apple Watch, for example, or my iPhone, it does nothing. On or off, it does nothing. It only works on the iPad Pro. So there's something very interesting going on there, and I'm not sure exactly what it is. But as long as they're paired, you can use the Pencil to hit any target on the screen. It basically works like a finger in non-pen apps, and then it does its pen thing in the drawing apps as well.
Do they sell AppleCare for the pen?
None was offered to me, and I don't think I've seen it. So it's probably, the answer is no to that, I think.
It'll be curious to see over time, like 6 months from now, how often that pen is being used day to day for you.
It will be, yeah. I've noticed, you know, since our Apple TV started working a lot better again in August, I've noticed myself using my whiteboard in the classroom much less and preferring to, you know, I've got my projector on all the time and preferring to, you know, connect my iPad to the Apple TV and pull up something like Explain Everything and just, you know, sketch on that, because it goes onto a much bigger screen in a much more convenient place to where my whiteboard is in the classroom. So I've been kind of interested in the possibility of the Pencil for making that even more precise, because I can do it with my finger and it's okay, but it's never been that great. And being able to just put it down on the desk and draw on it, you know, without caring about wrist rejection or whatever, seems to me to be something that would be really nice to have.
Any apps that... you know, we mentioned Explain Everything. What other apps have you used with the stylus?
So I tried quite a few today. I have a number installed. So I tried, obviously Notes is kind of like the poster child for this whole feature. And it is by far, Notes is by far the best ink engine that I've used so far with the Pencil. It's the most responsive. It's the fastest. It does a good job with pressure sensitivity. Some apps give you a more dramatic effect, but Notes is just does a great job of keeping up your pen and not detecting any input from your hand. So the way it works, it seems, Bradley, is when you put the Pencil down first on the screen, that essentially disables all other touch input apart from that coming from the Pencil, because you put the Pencil down and then touch the screen beside you, like deliberately try and make a mark, and nothing will happen. It was completely dead. You can't operate anything else on the screen. So there's clearly some interaction with the Pencil and the screen that basically says, don't listen to anything else, but this thing's emanating from this point or paths from it. But then when you raise the Pencil, there seems to be a small period of time whereby, existing touches will not be honored. So if you put your hand down and the Pencil goes down, your hand can stay down, and because that was already down, it will not detect that as a touch. So there's some interaction with when the pen goes down, when the pen comes up, and what touches were already there versus new touches afterwards and so on. So it does a really good job. I also tried Notability, which is a big app in our maths department. They love that in maths. And that is really good as well. That works just fine. It's very fast and good with the Pencil and good at its palm rejection. Explain Everything has not been updated. So the interface is a little bit big there, but it works well with the pen. It's a little prone to picking up tiny bits of hand input outside of the pen use, but not unusably so. It's just, you know, a tiny dot here and there that you just can quickly rub out. You know, it's not picking up big smudges or anything from your hand. Evernote has now got in-note sketching as well. So I tried that, and that works very well. It works well with the Pencil. Two that disappointed, or one other that is good, is Microsoft OneNote. Does a fine job for people who use that. I don't personally use that app, but it works fine. Two that were disappointing was Paper by 53, surprisingly considering it was like a launch app for this thing. But I found the pen input on Paper by 53 to be very laggy. So you could draw a fast stroke with a Pencil and you could see 5 to 8 centimeters of blank space between your Pencil tip and the line that was being drawn. I mean, that's how laggy it was. And I was very surprised at that.
They could be sabotaging it.
Yeah, well, you never know. Maybe they're confused about the identifier Pencil. I don't know. And the other one that actually was very disappointing was iTunes U, which I'm very unhappy to report that, because I was hoping that iTunes U would you know, marking documents in iTunes U, this would be an amazing thing with it, and it's just not very good. I mean, by some distance, it was the worst pen experience, even for pen apps that hadn't been updated to take advantage of the pencil, and iTunes U supposedly has, iTunes U was the worst. And what I mean by the worst was that, like, there were points where I was working on it where I actually missed input from the pencil, that I would write and nothing would come up. It's like, come on, how is it worse than using my finger? but there seems to be a change. The ink engine behaves differently on the iPad Pro with the pencil than it did on the iPad Air 2 without the pencil, in the sense that it's more of a kind of marker pen on the iPad Air 2, and it's more of a kind of pencil. You know, it's got a kind of texture to it on the iPad Pro. So it seems like they've tried to do something for the pencil, but either they've just not done it very well, or it's buggy or something. But it's just not at all good, and it really needs to be fixed as soon as possible.
I would love to see some. I don't know why I'm concerned about the battery of this, but like, I would love to see how, like, continuous writing versus, let's say, marking up, where you're constantly taking the pen up and off the screen, mm-hmm. affects it.
Yeah, I just don't have enough technical detail to kind of speculate on that, or even just enough experience. But the other thing about the pencil is you sort of don't worry about the pencil's battery life, because there's no indicator on the pencil as to when the battery life is good or bad. If you pull down Notification Center on the iPad, you can see in the batteries widget, it's got the iPad battery, but it also has the Apple Pencil battery level in there. So mine's sitting at 49% right now. And I did just plug it in for a while into the iPad and just watch that number go up, and it goes up very quickly. So the rapid charging claims about the pencil are certainly true.
Well, you know, there's a problem with devices like that that say, like, my Fitbit will last 3 to 4 days. And you almost have a tendency to want to charge it daily. Mm-hmm. You just always have it topped off, where, like, the Kindle lasts so long, you really don't even think about it.
Yeah, and you sort of forget to charge it once it does go down. Yeah.
So did you pick up, you've got the Apple Pen. Mm-hmm. What about a case?
I did not buy any case for my iPad Pro at all. The reason being that I knew from even just the short time that I used it, I did not want to buy the smart keyboard case. One, it's just way too expensive. Two, it's a very inelegant solution. And I think it's interesting to see that a lot of the embargoed reviews that came out said the same thing, that they weren't crazy impressed with the keyboard case. I think it suffers from the lack of a kickstand on the iPad. You know, the Microsoft keyboard covers seem to be much more elegant. They're just a flap that comes down because the iPad can support itself, or the Surface can support itself, whereas the iPad has to be supported by the case as well, and that's kind of annoying.
Yeah, I'm struggling with Apple's new case options. Mm-hmm. You know, like on the iPad Mini 4, if you combine the back cover and the front cover, it's like $100. I mean, I'm all for, like, paying a little bit more for the Apple branded case sometimes, but I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, I was very, very happy with my smart case on my iPad Air 2. That's the one with the back piece and the sort of smart cover front. All as one. I had the leather one, the blue leather one, and I had it for the entire time I had the iPad Air 2, and I never once thought about getting a different case, and that's the first iPad I've ever had where I've had one case for the whole time I had the iPad. But that case has been discontinued. I think it was discontinued for the Mini 4 as well, although it was available for previous Minis. So Apple are doing a smart cover and a silicone back case. I think it's basically the same options as on the iPad Mini 4. But in the UK, you're talking about £65 for one part of that and £49 for the other part. You know, you're like, you know, £115 for an iPad case, basically, that is not as good as a single case. You know, get out of here. It just seems like a money grab, you know. It's a worse option for much more money, almost double the cost of a smart case. And I just, like, leave that.
Well, the question is, like, who's going to want just the back? Like, what's the point of that?
Yeah. I mean, I think what it does give you is it lets you make one back that you can sell to smart case buyers and smart keyboard buyers, right? So you don't have to make a smart keyboard cover and a smart keyboard case and a smart cover and a smart case. So maybe it's an inventory control thing, but, you know, it's just not as good, you know. I personally think that the magnetic smart covers have probably been the source of more damage to more iPads than they have actually protected iPads over the course of their availability.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I do like the one that covers the entire thing. I particularly like the case you had for your iPad Air. I think you had a keyboard case from Logitech.
Yeah, that was the Logitech Fabric Skin Folio. That unfortunately broke. I had that one. I had a warranty replacement. The durability on that was not great, but it was a very nice keyboard to type on.
But it goes back to the question: is like, do you want to carry a keyboard case around if you're dominant input is not an external keyboard? And I think for me that was, and that's the reason I never had a keyboard case on any iPad I've ever owned, mm-hmm. is because that was something I did some of the time, but not near even in the majority of the time.
Yeah, but then you're carrying about all of the time. That's the equation you've got to trade off. And personally, I'm sticking with, I've got an Apple Bluetooth keyboard, just a desktop Bluetooth keyboard, which worked perfectly well. I'm going to keep that around, and I've been using this a small Amazon Basics tablet stand, which is like £8 or something on Amazon. It's just big enough to hold up the iPad Pro in landscape, but not in portrait. So I've kind of got that and the keyboard on my desk, and I'm just sort of dropping the iPad into that and turning on the keyboard and then turning off the keyboard and taking it away again when I want to do something else. So I've got it in, I have it in no case right now. I would like a case because I think, because the new software keyboard is so nice, I want to get it down into that kind of low typing position, where it's propped up a little bit, but not, you know, laptop screen vertical. But I'm still just looking for the right case for that to happen. I'm hoping for some new options quite soon.
Yeah, I think probably the downside of this timing is you're not likely to see them out before Christmas.
Yeah, they're probably going to be. There are some advertised on Amazon right now. You know, some people have made them just based on the announcement of the iPad Pro rather than the release of it. But they're not typically from particularly reputable manufacturers. So all I'm doing at the moment for transporting the thing about is putting it in. I have a neoprene sleeve built into my backpack, which was originally sized for my MacBook Air, 13-inch MacBook Air, and the iPad Pro fits in just perfectly. So I'm just going to use that to get it to and from school and then just, you know, keep it lying about.
Something kind of ironic there, about that, yeah. Carrying around in your MacBook sleeve.
Yeah, it's a vanquished victors, yeah.
So I guess really, you record this podcast on a Mac Mini, right?
Yeah, I'm actually back to recording it on my MacBook Pro now. Yeah, I reverted back to Yosemite to make it work. Yeah.
Do you think, like, assuming you had like a Mac Mini at home that was like your Plex server, mm-hmm. and then we could record this podcast on, and we'll explain in a minute why we don't record the podcast on iOS every week. Mm-hmm. Do you think you would sell your Retina MacBook Pro?
It's certainly conceivable. I mean, this laptop has not left my desk in 8 weeks now. Give you some idea. You know, that includes 2 weeks of travel to Dubai and holiday, and 4 weeks of school. I've just been taking my iPad out of the house, and that laptop has not left the desk. So, yep, I think, you know, it's getting very, very close to that now. So I like to have this machine back here so that I can, you know, I'm using screens to reach back to occasionally to do something that I can't do on the iPad. But that's, you know, once a week, once a fortnight, something drops up like that. It's pretty rare. So yeah, I think, you know, having a Mac in my life somewhere, you know, we have our Apple Configurator Mac at school, which is in my classroom, which I can use. It's sort of set up a wee bit with some of my stuff, but not really. And having one or other of those would be, I think, enough overall. Yeah.
Yeah, like I could see a world in the future where I have a Mac Mini at home, just headless, plugged into my network, mm-hmm. and I could see a world in the future where, like, I always have that, but maybe I don't have anything else.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yep, I'm trying to think of, you know, why would I take my MacBook Pro on holiday with me? You know, why would I take it on a trip where I'm going to present? You know, why would I do that? You know, there's no lack on iOS for any of the stuff that I do in those situations. You know, Keynote on iOS is perfectly good. Safari on iOS is perfectly good for what I need it to do. You know, all the other tools are on iOS. And in many ways, you know, I look at the tool set that I use on the Mac now, it's very, very, very small. It's basically a desktop class web browser. that appears like a desktop web browser to websites, and Adobe Audition and some audio routing tools to do this podcast, and that's it, you know, really and truly.
Just to give like some inside baseball to our listeners, it's like the way to explain like why necessarily you don't record this podcast week to week, and this is something that really another kind of mid-hanging fruit for iOS. Mm-hmm. In podcasting, we like to do what's called double end recordings, and so like when I'm recording directly like into QuickTime, I am also running like my audio. And so, like, even if Skype hiccups, like, which actually I didn't tell you, but it has hiccuped one or two times throughout the show randomly, It doesn't, my stream is not affected. So, like, it's always me talking when I talk. And I also run a program called Skype Call Recorder, which is a Skype plugin that records both ends of the conversation into, like, a .mov file, which later we can split into separate sides of the conversation. And then you, correct me if I'm wrong, do that same similar setup. Mm-hmm. On your end, using some different applications, right?
Yeah, so I've got Audio Hijack Pro, which is taking audio from Skype, puts it into one track in Adobe Audition, and I'm recording directly into Audition with the other track. So I'm seeing two tracks appear in the multi-track view in Audition right now. One is your voice and one is my voice. And then I use that Skype track and its relationship with my track to line up the audio you send me, which is your end of the recording, and then I delete the Skype track so that we've got two high-quality recordings side by side.
Yeah, and so the reason iOS can't do that is because there's no way to take like audio from, say, Skype or FaceTime and funnel it into an app.
Yep. Now, there are mechanisms for doing that kind of thing on iOS. So there are two ways to do this. There's one called AudioBus, which is a third-party app, which basically used the audio MIDI routing system that was built into the core audio system on iOS to make it possible for you to play a sound in one app and record it in another app on one iOS device with no other additional hardware. So, for example, you can have a synthesizer and you can play it on your iPad and you can be recording in GarageBand in the background and the audio will go through. Now, Apple brought out an official API that basically does the same thing. It's called InterApp Audio. And that came out, I think, in iOS 7 or iOS 8. I think it was 7, actually.
I think it was 7.
Yeah. And that's what GarageBand supports. So if you want to record in GarageBand, you can set up an InterApp Audio chain between some sound-producing app and GarageBand, and that audio will be funneled digitally into GarageBand. And like you said, Bradley, the failing for podcasting right now is that neither Skype nor FaceTime support either AudioBus or InterApp Audio for their audio streams. So there's no way to replicate what we do on OS X on iOS right now. We can do it in such a way that, you know, I record my microphone, you record your microphone, and then we just somehow sort of synchronize it by hand. And that would work. But it's kind of weird because you're recording yourself on your iPad, but then you need another machine to have the Skype call, right? So you have to, for example, like use our iPhones to have the Skype call with a little pair of earbuds in our ears, and then we've got our podcasting headphones on top with our podcasting setup going at the same time. So that has a certain, you know, it's not so unreliable, but it doesn't have the belt and braces approach that... that having a call recorder running and things does as well.
Yeah, it's like we have basically multiple levels of damage control if someone's computer crashed or something. And then we've only had one time in 3 years of doing the show that we actually lost one recording, and that was about 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Both of our computers hard froze for some reason.
That was in the early days of El Capitan, I think.
Yes, what are we thinking? Stupid. I don't know. Yeah, anyways. So, that'll be interesting to me to hear your thoughts after about 3 or 4 months with this device. Mm-hmm. And if you settle into routine with it, see how, if you've settled on a case and if the Apple Pen it remains a part of your workflow day to day.
Yeah, I can certainly see the pen will live in my school bag, and you know I'll bring it out in class. I'm sure of that because I already do. I've got the 53 pencil as well, and I have used that from time to time. But it was always frustrating because of its low level of accuracy. When you're trying to write and draw a diagram or whatever, it's very frustrating. But the Apple Pencil is just so much better. It doesn't even deserve to be in the same category as anything that you've written with on an iPad before. It's a completely different thing. And so much better than anything else you've seen before.
Well, I think that's a good place to wrap it up for there.
Yep.
Next week, we have a Ask Out of School episode planned. We have questions that have come through, so we're going to kind of pull out of the mailbag. Mm-hmm. So if you have questions that you want to ask us, go to outofschool.net, and you can contact us there, and we'll do that. We'll do that next week. But I am Bradley Chambers on Twitter. I'd love to get love hearing from listeners. So if you listen to the show, have comments, feedback, we love always hearing from listeners. And my blog is chambersdaily.com.
Okay, and I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web.
Have a great week, everybody.